Foolish mortals, you wandered into the house of tortured souls with your host, John.
No business born insecure junkyard motherfucker!
And Dixie.
You're a weird, fucking, obsessed, little, fat, ugly troll.
They are House of Tortured Souls. Live.
Never seen so many backwards-ass country fucks in my life.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Good afternoon. Good morning. This is John with House of Tortured Souls live. Officially, we are now finally live.
Are we live?
We are officially live. We had signal. People are
now
watching.
Now it tells me I'm live.
People, millions of people are watching you right now, Alan.
And they're seeing how slow I am. I'm like 5 minutes slow. And I don't know what that intro is. I mean, I don't know any shit about rednecks around here.
Well, I'll definitely tell you something up around these parts here. And with that southern accent of yours, I couldn't imagine you'd know anything about them.
No, it's definitely not how I got my nickname.
Well, hey, speaking of our intro, thank you, Mr. Rocky Gray, for the beautiful music as well as the graphics for that. Rocky Gray, boys and girls. Noted famous musician, artist, and now coming up with his own directorial debut movie, 10/31/16, independent horror anthology. So be looking for that real soon as well. Rocky, we thank you. Sorry?
Easy to remember title, so look it up. 10/31/16?
Yep.
2016. It's a whole date, so
yep.
Don't be lazy and try to short it.
We got a good show coming up for you guys today.
I want to give a quick shout out to my friend Brian Cohn, who is expecting his first child with his lovely lady friend due at any moment. And their little boy is going to be named Rocky. So shout out to Rocky, and shout out to Rocky, who is on his way, hopefully.
Well, very nice, and congratulations.
They're ready. Guys.
Very, very nice. Anything else popping up, Rock? Anything else happening in the world down there you want to mention to us real quick?
No hurricane, so we're good down here.
Good. You're back on the road, though?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I now have a car.
I saw the Pimpmobile. Looks good.
I have no way to pay for it, so people, please send me money.
Well, this is the American way, right? Get what you can afford.
So what are we doing online today?
Online today, we've got two very special guests coming to you from New Jersey. Mr. Tom Ryan, film director, actor, and producer, Mr. Todd Starick, is also joining us in the studio today.
And we would never mess those names up, ever.
No, not even if they told us. So we hope everybody enjoys it, sticks around, spreads the word, and remember, House of Tortured Souls Live is now coming to you. Live, not pre-recorded.
So, can I give a shout out to Atomic Cotton as well?
Please do. Because,
I am wearing one of their beautiful shirts for one of my favorite movies, and since I'm doing this on my camera, if you are watching, you won't see it. But if you check out the YouTube of our interview, you will get to see a little bit about this shirt. So thank you, Atomic Cotton, for doing great work as always.
Yes, and Alan, thank you for stealing my thunder, because honestly, almost every time you guys see me in a video, I'm usually wearing that exact same shirt that I got from the Scares at Care convention about 2 years ago when I first ran into the boys down there. Love that shirt. Good stuff. Atomic Cotton. Great. So anyhow, stick around. We got special guests coming up. House of Tortured Souls Live. Keep it evil.
113 new messages. Oh, my.
I was just wondering, where the newspaper boy was.
You got any biscuits for sale in there?
It's because of men like you that all must be destroyed.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to House of Tortured Souls Live, officially live. My cohort, Mr. Alan Dixon Lord, where are you, buddy?
I'm right here. Can you not see me?
You're the little man down there. You got to remember, I see everybody very, very small right now. Simply because I have the control panel. Now you are big. And now Todd is big.
Oh, I'm just like the way I'm breaking my nose out.
Hey, you guys. Welcome to the show. Joining us now, correct me if I'm wrong, both New Jersey boys, correct?
Yeah.
Sure.
Joyzy in the house.
Oh, don't say Joyzy. God, I'll slap you.
Hey, you know what? I actually grew up, I lived in, right outside Ocean City. I was in Mays Landing for years. So I say it lightheartedly.
All right, I'll give you
no offense, trust me.
I have never been to New Jersey, but I have watched part of one episode of The Sopranos. So I feel like I know it well.
How you doing?
Alan, would you care to introduce our guests this evening, this afternoon, this morning?
But okay, this is Todd and Tom. I'm not going to try to get your names wrong. I'm not going to try to get them wrong. See, I've already been through a few of these. They are filmmakers in the Theater of Death, correct?
Oh, no, incorrect. It's at the Theater of Terror.
Yeah. Theater of Terror.
But death can be terrible. So.
This is why I don't do introductions, and I'm like, oh yeah, toss it to me, and I'm.
I'll tell you what, Tom. Why don't you introduce yourself to our audience? Tell us about the new project that you guys have working on right now.
Okay, so my name is Tom Ryan. My cohort there is Todd Staruch. He's a producer. I'm the director and writer on a new anthology project called The Theater of Terror Anthology, and our production company is Theater of Terror. And so what we're doing is we're putting together 4 15-minute short films with a wraparound story as a horror anthology in the classic vein of things like Creepshow or Tales from the Dark Side, Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, Night Gallery, in that. And so that's exactly what we're doing. We have an Indiegogo going right now, and to raise funds for. We're actually in the last 9 days of the Indiegogo.
I saw that post this morning.
Yeah, man, we're almost at 50%, and feeling good about the momentum. We've gotten a bunch of donations today, so we're rocking a little bit.
Nice, very nice. So now, are you filming all aspects of every segment, or are you? How can I put it? Many different anthologies, you have different directors nowadays doing different little segments, yeah, putting it into one. Is every aspect of this yours?
Yeah, it is. We are changing effects artists and cinematographers.
Okay.
We were going to go with the director thing, but the problem was most of the guys that we really wanted to work with are really buried in other projects right now, and we just felt that it's hard enough to schedule cast,
right,
and then to get the filmmakers and different cinematographers. We definitely wanted to go with different cinematographers at first, and then we considered the director thing. But we just kind of thought it would be a little tough as far as scheduling and getting the project to actually roll when you get in so many people in different positions to participate. It's really hard to get everybody on the same schedule.
Sure.
Really difficult, yeah.
Right. And Todd, now you have also had parts in other films. Well, one I definitely know of, the name is escaping me, and I apologize for that. It was one that Tom, you and Russell Hackett had done, I believe about a year and a half back.
Yeah, Wrapped.
Yep. Exactly, Wrapped. I'm sorry, I apologize. Good film. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you. Much so that you couldn't remember the name.
It was too big.
Yeah, I really loved your film, guys. I just can't remember the title. But it was great.
Early morning podcast and alcohol. They mixed great.
I do sincerely apologize.
No, it's all good. Yeah, it was. The film was called Wrapped, and Russ wrote it with Jerry Janda, who was also played a big role in the film, and Tom directed it. And it was a lot of fun to work on that film. These are good people to work with. I had a great time, and it was my first real extended role in a film. I had played small roles in indie films before, but this was the first time anybody, wisely or unwisely, trusted me to have a big role in the film. But it was a lot of fun to do, and I had a really great special effect that was done for the film that we had a lot of fun with. Some great makeups by Rotten Candy Special Effects, Lisa and Ed Fisk. Big shout out to them for doing a very realistic pipe through the skull for me. That was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was great to work with these guys. I'm glad to be working with Tom and Russ yet again.
Well, now the two of you are very, very active in the community, in the horror community. I mean, I see your names on everything. Everything that's going on. I know, Todd, you host. If you want to tell us about your Cafe Z that you host, you have one coming up, August?
End of July, July 29th. Okay. It's called, the event is called Grindhouse Nights at Cafe Z.
Right.
We have 2 to 3 events per year. Tom, in fact, is one of my co-hosts along with Carolyn Barris. And what it is, it's really just a celebration of local independent horror filmmaking. We screen a whole bunch of indie films throughout the day, along with a bunch of horror-themed entertainment, cosplay, vendors, costume characters walking around. It's fantastic. And one of our points of pride is, and this is not to say anything against the judged film festivals, but one of our points of pride is it's not a judged festival. There's a lot of those. It's really to just get filmmakers and fans together to enjoy indie films and stand around and talk about it. And it's a great networking event, too. We have a lot of people that end up working together because of connections they made at Grindhouse Nights at Cafe Z. So it gives me great joy to be able to do that and to see people working together based on an event that I hosted.
No, of course. And I tell you what, I've had the utmost respect and admiration for you doing something like that. It's actually inspired me to what you do is one of my goals in the future is just to be able to try to get people together like that annually, biannually, something along those lines, just to be able to come together. And I have unfortunately not been able to attend. I think you're roughly 3.5 hours away from me. But knock on wood, one day I will definitely be there. If it looks like a good time, I always see the pictures. You know, I've seen all kinds of people that you've gotten to know through the horror community. Yeah, it just looks like a great time.
Yeah, it is. We have a great time. I go to a lot of film festivals. I have a lot of friends that host film festivals. I'm a judge for a few of them. And there's always a place for that to be recognized. But I love just seeing people get together to enjoy the kinds of films that we all love. And to just be able to hang out. And one of the high points is after each film, we do a Q&A with the filmmaker and the crew that's cast and crew that come out. And it's always great to hear questions from the audience and such about how the film was made. And I know the filmmakers get I'll have a lot of fun with that as well, being able to actually talk about their films in front of a captive audience. It's great.
Oh, that's great. So how did something like that, how did that come around with you starting that out?
Well, the seeds of it came about. A gentleman that I'm sure you all know his name, Rob Dimension, is a very good friend of mine, and he, I want to say, we're going back 6 or 7 years now, hosted a club called the New Jersey Pennsylvania Horror Club. And we would get together in the back of a comic book store out in Pennsylvania, watch an independent film and just sit around and discuss it with one another.
Right.
And really it was just horror fans just hanging out and talking about indie films. When that sort of... Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to... I miss that. It seems like social media has taken over so much. I miss the days kind of when horror fans just, it was kind of harder for us to connect. So when we did, you did form into those clubs where you go watch movies, sit around, talk. And that was one of my favorite parts of the convention, wasn't so much meeting the celebrities, but just like getting all these horror fans together to go out in the lobby and bullshit about the psychological meanings behind Friday the 13th while drinking, you know, and
right,
and
right.
Everybody just shooting the shit. That's such a fun time.
Yeah, and just and so that event combined with me just for the last 25 years getting guys together at my house to just watch the most extreme, violent, gore films that we come across, you know, and just these ridiculous, over-the-top films, and we would just sit around drinking beers and enjoying them, and having a friend that I've known since the third grade who owns a restaurant and bar, it seemed perfect. Like, let's get together here,
right.
We can eat, drink all day, and watch horror movies all day. What is better than that?
That's a whole weekend event, too, correct?
It's one day. I would love to be able to expand it, but, you know, I'm not sure about my friend letting me take over her restaurant for two straight days, letting the freak show roll into town. but we are working on that. So this year is our fifth anniversary of Grindhouse Nights. So who knows? Like, it grows every time. You know, at the last event, we had a packed house. I don't think we could have fit another person in the screening room. So who knows where it'll go from here.
Well, definitely keep tabs and let us know about it, and we'll be more than happy to, you know, share that out socially for you. But then again, at the same time, I don't want you to have to turn people away at the door. I understand you're on a limited size capacity.
But it's a tough problem to have, you know?
Well, now let me ask, with you guys coming together with something like this, and you've got, let's say, hypothetically, you've got Monster Mania coming up in end of August. Mm-hmm. Would you see you guys... You know, would you see yourselves bending at something like that, pushing for new films and productions and so forth?
It's funny, we actually discussed that recently in regards to the New Jersey Horror Con in September
at the
filmmakers table. We're kind of on the fence about it right now because the fact that we're doing these four short films, it is a lengthy process, even though they're only supposed to be 15-minute short films. Just the pre-production on each one is an involved process. The shooting is relatively quick because short films, but the pre-production and the planning is a little bit of a process. So we're not sure if we do wind up at one of these events, if we're going to have that much to offer besides basically just promoting what we're doing. There's always our older movies, but Faces has got distribution. The Wrapped is on the film festival network right now. Day 9 is basically available on YouTube as well. So there's not a lot that we have as far as merchandise-wise to sell.
Uh-huh.
There's a possibility that we're going to do it just to, you know, basically just to promote what we're doing. I don't think the projects will be done by then, but we can do a little bit of marketing there. So that's kind of up in the air right now.
Yeah, it can never hurt to try and get the buzz out. I mean, I understand it'd be a couple dollars out of your pocket to go set up as a vendor for the weekend, but the return would hopefully be good for you on something like that.
Yeah, and absolutely. And it's kind of, I mean, Todd and I are always at these cons and these fests anyway. We've kind of discussed the possibility that, look, if we get a table, it just kind of gives us a home base. Like, we're not going to be there anyway.
Right.
You know, it's definitely something we're considering. We just want to have a little bit more to offer than us just sitting there pitching what we're doing.
Right.
We're going to consider maybe some posters, maybe some collector's t-shirts or something like that. But, it's a possibility. We'll definitely announce it if so.
Yeah, please let us know.
Definitely
push that out for you. I know I was actually lucky enough I was able to get press passes for that convention, so hopefully I'll be running into you guys.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah, awesome. One of the, just to touch, piggyback on what Tom was just saying, one of the challenges is, you know, John, you mentioned a few minutes ago about, you know, celebrity autographs. These conventions now have become so centered around the celebrity guests and getting autographs that it's a real challenge for merchandise vendors, indie film vendors, filmmakers to really grab people's attention because they're there to meet their, for the most part, they're there to meet their favorite celebrity. And I've seen a ton of newer convention goers show up at a convention, go get their two or three autographs and get their celebrity meet and greet and get in their car and leave. Like, they don't even bother with the vendor room or anything, you know? So it is a real challenge. And, you know, to Tom's point, we've been mulling it around. Sometimes it's better it's easier to just come up with, say, a lobby card and just walk around the convention and just hand it out. You know, spending a couple of bucks on those cards with all your social media links and so forth on the back. Right. Sometimes can go longer than just parking at a table and saying, please, please, please come pay attention to our film that we're playing the trailer for here on our laptop.
With autograph prices now, no one can afford. I mean, if you go, you pick up your, you know, you pick up your autograph from Deegan for $80 to $100, and then you go, you get your Daryl for $120 from Ritas, you don't have money to go spend on stuff at a vendor table that maybe you're unsure of. You know, I've seen a lot of the vending moving more toward Walking Dead prints and stuff like this so that people can get them, grab them, get them signed. It's not like the old days where the vending room was like the first thing you hit. When I started going to conventions in 2005, autographs were a big part of it, but the convention room was the most crowded area of a convention. People... it was the first thing people ran to, and then they went and got their autographs. And now, I still get autographs, but, you know, you go in, and you line up, you stay in line for 1 or 2 hours. By the time you get your autograph, you're broke and you're tired, and it's time to go home, go eat, go drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. I think it's eating itself alive, though. I mean, the conventions are making money off of these people, but the vendors are losing money, and that's not going to hold forever.
Yeah, and that's interesting, too. I wonder what will... I mean, the thing is, it's kind of the vendors are drawn to the conventions because of the celebrities that are drawing the crowds, but so is it going to get to the point where the vendors stop going because they're not making... They're not piggybacking off those celebrities anymore? Is that eventually what's going to happen? And we'll see. I mean, as of now, there doesn't seem to be any decline in attendance in some of these events. I mean, we've been to them and seen the lines wrapped around the block for certain celebrities,
mm-hmm.
2 to 3 hour wait for certain celebrities, you know, triple digit photo op, you know, and people are still doing it. So, you know, if they pay, the celebrities will continue to come and continue to let, you know, inflation raise their rates and
yeah. Like,
yeah, just as a vendor, you're right. They've kind of gotten pushed to the back. One great example of this is the last time I did the Chiller Convention. We were kind of, you know, hit or miss all weekend. And when Sunday came, honestly, we did fantastic on Sunday. But what it was the overflow of people that didn't spend money where they thought they were going to spend it on vendors, and they had money to burn. And so they came by our table and you know, thank God for all those people and all those supporters because we sold out of our film.
Oh, great.
Which made the weekend awesome. But Friday, man, I was, you know, I was sitting on the edge of my seat saying, am I going to move any of this merchandise? But when Sunday came along, it paid off. But, you know, I don't know how often that's going to happen anymore as far as, you know, when people come and they spend that amount of money to see a celebrity.
Yeah. It's kind of like Facebook. I know people have been preaching the demise of the convention for the last several years, you know, and, oh, the conventions are dying out, they're dying out. They haven't yet. The vendors seem to be hurting. I think the conventions overall are still doing good, most of them. You know, there's been a lot of news with Wizard World kind of imploding, lots of, I think, table stuff going on and some people... one of the owners, I believe, got sued over, or possibly even some charges pressed. Wizard World seems to be stumbling. Horror conventions, the ones that are left, Monster Mania, will be doing good.
Yeah.
Well, there appear to be more events than ever now. There are multiples every weekend. And, you know, we're in a little bit of the older age group. We're used to the more, you know, the Monster Manias and the Chillers. There's a Comic-Con every goddamn weekend now. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in, like, a small town. It's not even like New York Comic-Con and San Diego are obviously the biggies. Now we've got things like Garden State Comic Fest here in New Jersey or Newark, New Jersey Comic-Con. I'm like, what? Like, New Jersey Comic-Con? Because cosplay is so huge now.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it is.
Like, you could have a convention in your living room, give away a prize for best costume, and people will show up. Like, it's amazing. There are conventions now everywhere in small venues, and they're making money because people will pay an entry fee to just have their picture taken with their favorite cosplayers. It's
amazing.
It's unbelievable what I've seen with that.
It is absolutely amazing. It really is. You know, you talk about the cosplay too, and this is to take away from anyone that's doing it. By all means, I know you have friends that do it. I have friends that do it. You know, we've got Circus Rejects who are dear friends of mine. Father Evil's a dear friend of all of us. And I'm in no way taking away from it. I think it's great they're able to express themselves. It amazes me at how far it's come. You know, you go to a convention 10 years ago, and, oh, look, that guy's trying to dress up like, you know, somebody from The Walking Dead or, you know, Ash from Evil Dead or something like that. And you kind of pick up on it. Oh, now it's cool. Now if you go to a convention and you don't see cosplay people, you kind of wonder what the hell's going on.
Because
the popularity of it has grown, and the amount of detail that the people are putting into their costumes is incredible.
Yeah.
You know,
and back when I started, people weren't charging autographs as cosplayers. They were just fans who dressed up and went to the show, and now you're seeing more and more cosplayers being the guest at shows.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, more power to them. And Jessica Negri, I consider her table all day long. I think she's got a restraining order now, so I legally can't, but I could.
I've got a stack of them, Alan. Don't, you know, don't worry about it. I got a pile of them.
No, but it's great.
They're like trading cards. You just keep collecting them.
Yeah.
Yeah. What you said about cosplayers, John, is so on point, because now when you look around and they're not at the conventions, it is kind of strange, but they have almost become part of the draw.
Yeah. No, exactly. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and it's like, you get some that are repeat attendees at all these different conventions, and especially when they're really good at what they do, and they come with these really creative costumes, and they're just beyond, you know, amazing, and you get to see them up close and personal. It is part of the draw.
Sure.
And I think that they should definitely take it. I mean, it's funny because you say that cosplayers are now getting autographs and getting paid autographs and 8x10s and stuff. You consider that there's a lot of people, like Alan is hanging out at the table all day, you know, these, they are providing a service
under the table.
I sometimes consider myself a little bit hypocritical, because I do, you know, I have a lot of friends who are cosplayers, and I want to support them, so I will buy a signed print here or there, but for me, that's a quid pro quo. You know, they get a couple of bucks to help support their hobby, and I get a signed memento.
Right.
But I generally only do it from people that I know personally, you know, because, again, I'm trying to help them out. There was a time, you know, I know a lot of people get upset about it, and I know people that really rant about cosplayers charging money, and I can understand that, because it's a hobby that they choose to do. You know, I collect horror films. You know, I don't go online and beg people to donate money to me to help me support my DVD habit. You know,
right?
I wish I could. I'm sure there are some people that would do it. Sure. So you know, you sometimes you see these cosplayers, and the way it has evolved. I mean, I could go all day about it. Sometimes I do think it harms the community a little bit, because some of these cosplayers are now, oh, if you go and donate $30 a month on my Patreon account, I will give you access to a bunch of not safe for work photos, you know?
Yeah.
So now how is that cosplay? You know, someone in a Hulkbuster, you know, a Hulkbuster costume that took them 1,000 hours to build. I'm like, holy shit, that's cosplay.
Right.
You know, a woman in a red bikini that says, oh, look, I'm cosplaying as Lady Iron Man. Really? Now, before I get hate mail, which I will, I'm not saying you don't have a right to do that. Like, that girl can wear whatever the hell she wants and take all the pictures she wants. But, come on, is it really cosplay?
Right.
Because you're wearing a bra that looks like balls, you know? Come on.
But it makes me wonder if you have to start hosting cosplay conventions.
And then how do you determine who's, you know, who's an actual cosplay vendor versus who's a guest who's dressed up as cosplay at a cosplay convention, if that makes any sense at all. But the popularity of it is just through the roof. And, you know, a lot of points I do see, you know, you got certain people that just walk around for the fun of it.
Right.
I'm at a horror convention. I'm dressed up as my favorite character that I can get away with and sort of resemble because I'm there to have fun with it. Others have taken it to that next level, have invested their time and money into it, and have mastered their costume, their whole attire to match that character to a T, and who have now, like you said, are now vending. Now, do you, let's say somebody is dressed up as, is mocking a character. Let's say they're dressed up as Spider-Man. Do they have the right to vend as Spider-Man and collect money for that? Or do you cross the line and say, well, you know what, this is my original, I created this character, so it's mine.
Look, that's, first of all, that's for the lawyers to decide. If whoever owns Spider-Man wants to sue the guy, that's up to them. I'm not worried about it. If the convention is going to take the vendor fee for the table and let that guy vend, then that's on them. And then to speak to like what Todd said, if there are girls that are posing in red underwear and saying, I'm the female Iron Man, if there's somebody that's willing to pay for that, then that's all going to evolve on its own. And maybe she's more of a model than a cosplayer.
Sure.
Who knows? I mean, it's the same way we were talking about celebrities. If somebody's willing to dish out the money for any given trade, whether it be 8x10s of you in a red bikini and you're a female Iron Man, or whether you're going to a serious cosplay table where these girls are like, you know, Lady Death and she's completely, you know, and she's, you can see she's a total pro and has handlers and all that stuff or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It is, if people are willing to pay for it, I don't think that I mean, it doesn't bother me. Now, if it bothers me enough where I'm going to a convention and I'm not seeing what I want to see anymore, if I'm seeing a lot of models that think they're cosplayers or cosplayers that think they're celebrities or celebrities that are overcharging or what have you, it's my choice not to attend that convention anymore. And then, you know, their financial means will dictate whether or not they keep having conventions every year. You know, it's, I think there's a lot of things happening in the horror, cosplay, sci-fi, anime, in all those mediums that is changing dramatically and it's very quickly. And people, you know, just like the dot-com, you know, bubble, people are jumping all over it and trying to do what they can to take advantage of either making it a part of their lifestyle if they love doing it, or making money off of it if they think that it's profitable. But I think that all those things tend to work themselves out, right? I mean, reality TV, I don't think, is as popular as it used to be.
Right.
At one point, everybody was disgusted about how big it got. Like, every TV show is reality TV. And I think that bubble burst now. And people are like, okay, I want fantasy again. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Really popular. AMC TV shows are very popular. People have gotten back into that stuff again. But I think that that's something that is just going to take its course. It's going to work itself out. And listen, like, if somebody's willing to pay for something, no matter how ridiculous or phony or whatever we think that it is, somebody's going to take advantage of it.
Yeah, and more
power to you.
Make a buck off of it. What's that,
Tom? At the end of the day, Tom, how are those 8x10s of you coming along? I don't have mine yet. Speaking of people being willing to pay for things.
I'm just trying to find Lady Iron Man's web address while we're talking.
don't worry. I probably already have her autograph. I'll send you a copy.
Facebook timeline.
Just go through my photo album.
That's a great somewhere. Point. I mean, at the end of the day, that is what defines celebrity, if people are willing to give you money and line up. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how many movies you made. It doesn't matter if you've been naked on the internet. If people aren't willing to give you money, you're not going to be out there as a celebrity very long. Right. Without being a hypocrite, Todd, I mean, I'm the same thing. I've bitched about autograph prices, and I'm like, you know, $40 is my limit, and then I was in line to get a photo op with Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Right.
My friend wanted one, and and he's a cool dude. You know, I spent an hour waiting in line. We split a $100 photo op fee, but he's a cool dude. You get three, 4 seconds with him, and it makes the most of those 4 seconds. The handlers are like, get the hell out of here, and he's hugging you, talking to you. People like that get loyalty, too. You know, I don't want to mention anyone's name, Tom Savini, but, you know, you go up and meet some folks, and they're just so cold to you, you'll wonder why you want to get back. And I've had good experiences with Savini. I've never seen him be rude, but, you know, I know he gets the knack for being an asshole.
He does.
The best Savini story I've ever had, I was actually in line to meet Danny Trejo, and it was a pretty long line, and I get a tap on my shoulder, and I hear someone say, excuse me, asshole coming through. I turn around, and it's Savini.
Nice.
He wears it well, though.
He does. You know, I totally agree with you, Alan. I have vented my spleen on social media about autograph prices. I have a huge autograph memorabilia collection myself, but I always, the last paragraph of every rant always is, in the end, though, it's up to the fans. Sure. So, you know, Stallone was charging $400 for an autograph at New York Comic Con, and people were lined up to pay it. You know what? Good for them. Yeah. I don't need to meet Sylvester Stallone that badly. Like, you know, for me, for $400, it better be John Lennon, you know, back from the dead. So,
yeah.
But again, I do understand the frustration because it does draw away from vendors and indie filmmakers and stuff. I totally get that. But then you know what? You start to do things like, you know, to toot my own horn, like a Grindhouse Nights at Cafe Z or a Macabre Fair Film Festival. Out on Long Island, where it is all about the films and the filmmakers. Like, if you're that frustrated, you know what? Then instead of just bitching about it on social media, go and try to effect a change.
Exactly. Like,
try to start your own event, you know? I'm part of several local film festivals and events that are not about celebrity autographs. They might have a couple of lower level celebrities because you kind of have to have that now.
You gotta have that drive.
Sure. You know, like I mentioned, you know, Tom and I are both a big part of the Macabre Fair Film Festival run by L.C. Ginsberg. And we love that event because it's all about the films and the filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Still have a couple of, you know, celebrity guests there, but it's not focused on that. People are there to watch indie films and mix and mingle with directors and actors and actresses. So L.C. saw what was happening with autographs and said, you know what, I'm going to have a different kind of event. And she runs several events like that now throughout the year that are hugely popular that have nothing to do with autographs or celebrities. So again, you can bitch about it all day long, or you can go and you can try and effect a change.
Exactly.
Well, agreed.
I go to a small show in Biloxi, which I live on the Gulf Coast, so I'm kind of out of the big convention. I have to fly. If I travel, I try to go to the Scares at Care every year. I go to Horror Hound every couple of years, but I have to fly. But there's a small one in Biloxi, and they have guests, and the celebrity guests never do well. It just seems like who they get, they can't bring in Reedus, Andrew Lincoln. They can't bring people like that in. Last year, they had a decent guest lineup. I think Kevin Nash, Tara Reid. But still, no one got the autographs. Everybody packed into the film rooms. And me too, and I love autographs. But the hour drive, and I just sit and watch the movies all day. And it's cool as hell. You know, I pay one admission fee, and I can sit through movies for 3 days.
Right.
And never come out except to get popcorn. And it's great with the movie festival. They never, I cannot foresee them ever making their guarantees on the handful of celebrities they have, but packed all weekend.
Right.
And they recently combined with a gaming convention in the same building. It's kind of like you said about changing things and also evolving. They're evolving. You know, the autograph prices are too high for their community, interest in the community, so they've combined to stay alive and grow and more power to them. And I love the show. It's a small show, but it's a really kind of family atmosphere show. I love it.
Yeah, and, you know, Tom and I talk about this all the time. Like, people on social media love to say, I support indie filmmaking, I support indie horror, but then they never leave their houses to go to an actual film festival.
Exactly.
Right here in New Jersey, almost every weekend, there is a local film festival. Like, I could rattle them all off. You know, it's maybe $10 to get in, or $15 to get in, and you can watch indie films all day long, 12 hours straight, for $10 or $15. So, people, you know, and again, I don't, you know, this is not intended to be negative, but people, I don't think they understand what they're saying when they say, oh, I support indie filmmaking. Well, how? By just saying that on social media?
Right.
By Facebook.
By going to a local film festival and meeting the filmmaker. And sometimes, and Tom, please, you can attest to this far better than I could. Having someone walk up to you at a film festival and say, hey, I just watched your film in the screening room, and I freaking loved it. How far does that go? You know,
it's inspirational. I mean, this is why you do it. You know, when you filmmaking, and every filmmaker could say this, or who do you show your films to? Your family and your friends. It's great when your family's like, that's such a great job, and your friends are like, that's awesome, can I be in your next film? When you have a stranger walk up to you, or you're at a film festival and you just have a bunch of people that you can see are just completely, you know, blown away by what you did, or just inspired by it, or just they just want to meet you and talk to you. It's that's the payoff. I mean, that's the payoff to discuss your film on a different level with people. It one of the best things for me has ever been is when I do a film and I've written this script and the story and I have this vision in mind and I share it with a bunch of people. And then after they see it, they come to me and they start giving me their perspective and their opinions on the characters and stuff that I've never thought of that deeply about. I'm like, wow, that's awesome. And that's a great perspective. And it just goes to show you how when you create something and you share it with people, feel that support back from them, where whether or not you intended to affect them in a certain way, it did affect them in a certain way. And I mean, that's the beauty of art, right? It's all beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And that
exactly.
That's from different people. And it's amazing. That's my favorite part. I mean, one of my favorite experiences to tell you stories when we did, the premiere of Faces, and Todd was there, and, did in Lowe's Theater, landmark Lowe's Theater in Jersey City, which is a beautiful old movie theater. And we had the premiere Faces there, and we had this incredible turnout. We had people coming off the street because, again, this was a landmark theater. And so they only kind of do things every other weekend. They'll do, like, you know, Bride of Frankenstein is showing, or Raiders of the Lost Ark is showing. Very inexpensive to get in. It's almost more like a museum than it is a movie theater. But they still show films there. And when we had the premiere there, I mean, I grew up right around the corner from the place. We filmed most of the film in Jersey City. We thought it was a perfect venue, and the turnout was incredible. We had people pouring off the street that we didn't even invite to the event, just coming up and saying, what's this movie Faces showing? What's going on here? And we had close to 300 people turn out for the film. And when they came out, the lobby is packed, and it was, I was blown away. And Todd, you can attest to what the crowd was like and what the excitement was like. For this indie film and the attention all the actors were getting and that all of us were just getting from the crowd that was so enthused about what they had just seen. And I have so many friends of mine that are filmmakers that were there, approached me afterwards and just gave me the greatest compliments on it. And they were the kind of compliments that weren't just these friendship, like, oh man, it was a great job. They were really looking at me like, hey man, like, you really pulled off something really great here, and it was one of the best experiences of my life. You know, as far as being an artist and being a filmmaker, and you know, there's nothing that could come close to that when you're doing what we're doing. Yeah, you could talk about making a fortune off films or what have you, but you know, the money is great. Not that we've seen any of it.
Yeah, let me know when that is expected.
When that happens, that'd be happening. But right now,
all your money is going to Lady Iron Man. I know what's up.
That's right. All proceeds go to Lady Iron Man. Yeah, no, it's really a fantastic feeling. And
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I have no idea. I'll be in my bunk.
It doesn't surprise me that Todd has the photo, but that,
none whatsoever.
But that is within reach of the video.
Exactly. He didn't even it's have to get out of his chair to get it.
No, he didn't even get out. It's like, oh, here's my stack of bikini pics.
For those of you who do not know, find Todd online on Facebook. His offensive picture of the day. He finally posts.
Yes,
and I look forward to it every damn morning.
And he just carves a stack under his arm around the house. He's in the bathroom, and then he's in the kitchen, and then he's in the, you know, and he just
pulls them out one at a time.
It's like, oh, we're having a podcast today. I wonder if we're going to talk about Lady Iron Man. I better be ready.
Yeah, you never know. Actually, so if you guys must know,
uh-oh,
this is Valerie Leon. She was a James Bond girl, so it's
yes,
not actually.
And,
now, as far as why this happens to be sitting in arm's reach, I will prefer to keep that to myself. But
it's right there next to the Kleenex and the
yeah. Oh God,
hand lotion.
Yeah.
I have
noticed
tomorrow,
you haven't
so
seen
I can't...
my hands much at any point. What do you got there, Alan?
Bolero, so Derek.
Nice.
This is my spare poster room.
What a surprise.
I have crime posters.
Budweiser.
I have crime posters in my other room, and I just, like, interchange these posters with, like, the stickums. And I was going to actually put up my Tarzan the Ape Man with Bo Derek, which is one of my guilty pleasures, and I slept late and I didn't get a chance to.
I don't want
to
know about your pleasures, Alan. I really don't.
I was in bed playing outside
that way. Yeah. You know, I want to ask you guys, if you don't mind, going back earlier in our conversation, you were talking about how you guys would sit and you'd watch the most violent, gory horror movies you could. There's a whole new extreme, violent, gore-found movies that are out nowadays that people are just thriving off of. Atroz was one that was just recently released that I heard is probably the most offensive, disgusting movie ever produced, ever made. The August Underground series. And not to take away from anybody, please. I'm not trying to offend anybody because these are movie makers. It's their vision, their dream. I'm curious as to your thoughts on, it seems like certain movies nowadays, as far as the violence goes, they're all trying to be more and more extreme, and some of the realism in these films, and I've seen a few of them that just about damn near had me hit the stop button on the remote, because it's incredible the special effects some of these people are coming out with nowadays. And I just wanted your thoughts on, and yay or nay on some of them, I guess. Bottom line, your cup of tea, not your cup of tea, it's great, it's up to them, each their own, piece of shit, what your honest opinion on stuff like that.
I think there's a niche for everything, we could narrow down every genre sure, to the nth degree, and on some level I am a gore hound, but honestly, my buddies and I will get together and watch films like that purely for the shock value, so right, we can like elbow each other and go, oh shit, did you see that shit, did you see that? But not because I think it's a good film, and again, that's with all due respect to everybody out there. But what these underground filmmakers, I think, need to realize is that they are underground filmmakers. And they have a very, very narrow audience of a couple of hundred people that worship everything that they do. I'm only speaking for myself, and I love a good gore film. I do love the August Underground films because of the level of realism and sure, the amazing special effects that the Toe Tag team put together. But after a while, I got tired of seeing, a girl chained to a chair getting tortured, in every right, goddamn underground horror film. It's like, okay, great. Like, so you dreamt up a new way to cut up a person. Like, I don't care. Yeah. This is a shitty film's a shitty film, And right. Again, look, I haven't made it for my own film yet, so what the hell do I know, you know? But, again, after a while, it just got tiresome, just like the Saw films. Like, after the eighth one, I was like, oh, my God, yeah. And now they're making another one. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Right.
Like, everybody bitches that there's nothing new in Hollywood, and then they're like, oh, shit, Saw 9 is coming out? Awesome. Like, I can't wait. I'm like, so... There's a place for everything. Like, look, so I don't like romantic comedies. Some people do. Like, you know, good, that's fine. But after a while, it just got so tiresome. Like, how many new ways are there to murder another human being? Right. And the whole torture thing, I just got over real fast. Hostel, oh, cool. That was kind of interesting, you know? And I'm not going to go backpacking through Europe anytime soon. But after a while, again, all these underground movies with just the endless violence against women, you know, and again, like I said, the aforementioned girl chained up, you know, to a chair being tortured. Right. Now, whenever I see one of these directors go, you know, man, you know, you wait till you see my next film. The gore is going to be unbelievable. Okay. Yay. Right. You know? All right. Tom, what do you think?
I say that.
Yeah, for me.
During my martyr.
There you go. There you go.
For me, it's you know, I agree with Todd that for me nowadays, more if I watch those films, it's more for fun because usually they don't have the plot, the acting, or the story that, you know, is really captivating. Mm-hmm. They're extreme films that you kind of watch to just kind of, you know, that's crazy. We'll have a few beers and sit around. We're not really paying that much attention,
right,
as we are just kind of getting a few laughs from it. When I was younger, I did have an interest in, like, you know, what was supposedly enough films that were out for rent, or, you know, Faces of Death was really popular.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, but and then you find out that half of it was faked anyway, except for some of the monkey brain thing was faked, and I thought, well,
right.
I don't need really a monkey, who cares? Like, you know, in those days, nobody really was like, oh, no monkeys were harmed. Yeah, so it was... there was a curiosity to it, to say the least. I have friends that make splatter flicks. They're very good effects artists. They get very good effects artists to work on their things. I love what they do. And I watch it. I'm amazed by the work that they do. But my personal preference is and this is why I make films this way. I'm very much, a story guy. I've got that eerie feeling that, like, certain horror flicks would give you. And I love the jump scare, don't get me wrong. And I love the good, you know, like, decapitation scene or somebody's hand gets chopped off and you're like, oh my God! And you see it really quick and you're like, my God, how do they do that? That's crazy. I love that stuff too, but I love when that is just a piece of a larger, something that's just, you know, twisting you the wrong way when you're watching it, like older films, like, Evil Dead, like the original Evil Dead, that has some great gore scenes in it, but it was more like the setup that got to me.
Right, yeah.
Like getting cut off, or like the person, you know, it was more like the setup. Exorcist 3 was a movie like that for me, too. It just gave me this weird feeling when I was watching it, just like this eerie, just this uncomfortable feeling. Another flick that was like that was High Tension, right? The French film.
Oh, yeah.
Love them,
and that's got a ton of gore in it. But it was like all the stuff that led up to the gore that was like the
anticipation and the build up of it was intense.
No, it was perfect, man. I was high tension through the whole film. It was just and so stuff like that. Or if it's not even to that extreme, it could be something along the lines of a story like Bill Paxton, one of my favorite, Frailty.
Frailty.
Just that weird little, like, holy crap, like, this guy really is a warrior for God type thing at the end, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it. But, like, I didn't expect that, and that whole what led up to it, and the storytelling by his kids, and the relationship, all that, I loved it. I mean, that's what I love about horror, is more of that, the way that the film makes you feel while you're watching it, and the discomfort or like you're not sure. Look, we all know that sooner or later somebody's gonna get killed, there's gonna be that jump scare, We know that that's coming in horror films. It's those layers. It's that onion that's peeling. And you just kind of feel like uncomfortable about other things in the film. To me, that's the greatest part of horror. And that's what I like to make. That's what I like to watch. Not to detract from any of the other stuff that's out there, but if you're asking me my personal preference, gore is great, but I also think that it's easy if you have the right people doing it. It's easy to deliver that. It's harder to deliver a story that's woven so tightly that it just creeps you out under your skin, that just gets to you, gets to your subconscious, makes you think about it the next day. You know, you ever watch that movie or watch that TV show, and you go to bed thinking about it. Like, it disturbed me. You know, that was disturbing. Usually the jump scares, that you don't think about them later. You're just like, oh, you know, yeah, I've seen that. I mean, we've been seeing that since they've been able to at least do it pretty well on screen. We've been seeing that kind of stuff. So it's just gotten better. But to me, I don't want to say it's played out. I think that's important in any horror film. You want to see some gore because that's why I'm watching horror films.
Right.
I do love that. I love those extremes. But at the same time, if you're giving me characters I care about, and then you kill them, that's so much more powerful.
Right.
Just saying, hey, here's Jane Doe and here's John, her boyfriend, there. I'm like, now he's dead. Here's his head. Her legs are getting cut off. Now she's being tortured. But we really don't care about her because we don't know who she is. We don't know why we should care about her. That kind of stuff is very important to me. So to me, suspense, thrillers, just they just do it for me as far as the horror genre goes.
That's why, and I do have on my Martyr's shirt, and it's one of my favorite films, and it does have its gore. It has some extreme violence. But just that feeling of I'm watching something I shouldn't be watching, and after the movie was over, sat stunned for a while, and it's never left me.
Mm-hmm.
The ending scene, and I know a lot of people hate the way the movie ended, but that ending scene just bothered me so much.
Yeah,
and that's what I like. And the same thing with another movie that was controversial, people loved it, people hated it, The Witch, which not have a lot of gore. There's a scene near the beginning, but just... Yeah. In a dark theater, and I became just so in the film.
Mm-hmm. Great example.
Involved in it.
Totally
absorbed into the film, like I was a part of it, and left me with that disturbing feeling. And you talk about cheap, it's just like found footage. Found footage is a great genre if you use it to make a good story, not if you use it simply because it's a cheap way to make a movie.
Right.
So many people, like, I've got a hand cam, I can make a movie for $200 if I have my friends. And you could do that like Sam Raimi with The Evil Dead. You know, he didn't have a huge budget. He had improvising his own equipment, a bunch of his friends, and he made a masterpiece.
Yeah.
100 movies on Amazon Prime where it's some guy with no experience, no idea of how to use a camera, and he just gets a video camera and he films a bunch of people running and screaming and calls it a horror movie.
Yeah.
And that is, to me, is boring as shit. If it's nothing but gore, like you said, sit around with a bunch of friends, drink beer, watch it, you're entertained by the gore, the blood. But what I really want to watch, what I want to sit down and own, that I can sit in a dark room with or alone and watch, is the stuff that does have a story that bothers me. It makes me think, and I can't watch these all the time. I have to watch the light. I watch the Steve Martin movie every once in a while, The Jerk. You know, to me, a rom-com is a true horror movie, but I can't stand them. They scare me too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, filmmaking, like you mentioned The Witch, and this is something that I think about all the time. I love The Witch. And yet, half the people on social media were like, that movie sucked, nothing happens, and it's boring.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, then I can't help it if you have the attention span of a hamster.
Right.
You know, you can't deal with a film that's about isolation and religious extremism and, you know, psychological terror. You know, I'm sorry that it doesn't have those jump cuts and quick edits that are fed down our throat. But that was... You know, and movies like that, and It Follows, which I thought was fantastic.
Yep, I love it. Yep.
Again, people are like, oh, nothing ever happens. And I'm like, what do you mean nothing ever happens? Like, did you watch the movie?
Right.
And that just drives me crazy. And again, people like what they like, they don't like what they don't like. But some of the rationales that are given, you know, like if you say, well, I didn't like that movie because I didn't think the acting was good or whatever. All right. But to just say, oh, that movie was boring, nothing happens, is indicative of what we're talking about these days, where people want music videos instead of horror movies.
Right.
True.
Yeah, I could never say that The Witch or that It Follows sucks. You don't have to like the movie or be that entertained by it, but to say that they suck, that's an absolute terrible review of those films. I personally love both of those films, but if you didn't like what you saw, it was not bad filmmaking at all. Maybe you're saying, oh, plot hole here or there, but Todd has been quoted as saying there's no perfect movie anyway. So that's bound to be something that comes up, but I love those flicks, and exactly for the same reason that you were talking about. I mean, just get under your skin, make you think about them later.
Well, let me ask
like you. Go ahead, John. I'm sorry.
Alan, please, no. Take it away.
I was just going to say, and then I'll get back to it. It's like looking at a piece of artwork by Michelangelo and saying, I don't like that. That's cool. That's your ability. But if you look at it and say, oh, my God, he sucked. That's horrible. That just shows you really don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Pardon my language.
Right.
John, sorry.
No, it's all right. Here we are, four grown men on a Saturday afternoon. Families, lives, wives, whatever. What is it, in your opinion, about the horror genre? You know, you don't have a romantic comedy podcast, a bunch of guys sitting around talking, even a group of women, whatever. What is it? I mean,
God, I hope not.
The horror community is such a tight-knit group of people that, you know, I have had the opportunity and pleasure of getting to meet new people almost every day, it seems like, online, at events and so forth. What is it that horror that brings us together that does exactly what we're doing right now? Sitting around, talking about it. You guys are actively making horror to release to the audiences. What is it, in your honest opinion, what drives us in the horror world to not just say, all right, hey, that was a good movie, now back to reality? What keeps us driving to want to keep talking about it, to make more films, to make t-shirts for our websites and join more groups and do podcasts? What is it that does that for us? I want your honest opinion. Why?
Todd, you want to start?
Sure. I think it's because those of us who are true horror fans understand what Tom's like, F you, I'm not going to listen. we understand what horror is all about. To me, speaking for myself, horror is almost anything that takes you out of your comfort zone. It could be psychological horror. It could be body horror, whatever, demons, slashers, whatever. But it takes you out of your comfort zone. And I think we understand that, and the people who don't give horror any respect as a genre don't understand that. Like, I have plenty of family members that say to me, oh, how can you watch those type of movies?
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't know. How do you watch any Sandra Bullock movie? I don't understand it. Like, why do you like Steel Magnolias? Like, I don't get it. But that doesn't mean that Steel Magnolias is not a good movie. It just means that I don't get it, you know, and it doesn't resonate with me. It doesn't affect me. Now, me, horror's my first love, but I'm just a movie buff in general.
Sure.
Give me a good drama or a great comedy or even a great documentary, and I'll be totally into it.
Right.
But with horror, I think, again, we have a shared understanding of what horror is all about. Why, you know, why is Halloween? There we go. Speaking of horror, why does anyone drink Budweiser? I don't know. But again, I think
just glad no one was laughing at my pineapple Rita.
Oh, is that what you're drinking? Oh, God. But anyway, and then I'll let Tom answer. But again, like I said, we just have a shared understanding of what truly makes horror films a great and an important genre. And I think of late we're seeing a bit of a resurgence with the popularity of movies like The Witch and It Follows and so forth. The movies that are doing well, I think Hollywood is finally understanding there's a huge audience for horror, provided it's done right.
Right.
You know, all of those movies all made back their budgets many, many times over, you know? So, that's
yeah. What I believe you are asking is basically what's bringing people together like us for this YouTube video and on podcasts and on websites.
Right.
So I think that you definitely have different levels of horror fan. I loved horror when I was a kid. I used to bring Fangoria to the dinner table, and my mom would flip out because it'd be somebody's like open head, skull, brain exposed on the cover, and she'd be like, "What are you doing bringing that to the dinner table?" So I think that I was part of that horror crowd, especially back then, where it wasn't that popular, like on a blockbuster level, right? You could make a blockbuster horror movie. But there were people that we just really loved it. And again, not just because of the gore, but just for everything that it kind of changed for us, movie-wise. Right, our parents were growing up on a lot of dramas and comedies and stuff like that. And so horror was really kind of like our own thing. It's like rock and roll, right? Or heavy metal. It was like your own little thing. And people kind of came together because of that. Now, horror is very popular these days.
Yes. But
you don't have everyone that went to go see Scream or everyone that went to go see the reboot of Evil Dead. You don't have all those people keeping up with horror podcasts or horror websites. Then that's just like they go see the movie, it's popular, they hear about it, all their friends are talking about this film's coming out, they go and see it, and then that's kind of where horror ends for them. And then you have people like yourself, you got all the horror dolls in the house, and you've probably got, you know, movies, and you got posters, and you got collectibles, and all that type of stuff. They're right, and
there you go.
Yeah, and they kind of, those are the people that take it to another level, where it's almost like this little society of support. Because to them, it's I think it's the creativity for them that makes it more important to them, or it's just there's something about artists also that are drawn to horror. So you have a lot of people that are in the horror community that are tattoo artists, or that are magicians, or that are filmmakers, or actors, special effects artists, or any one of those things, or they have a magazine, or they want to take photos of models dressed up in horror stuff. And you have more people, they just, for some reason, horror draws people together more that way, because it is such a niche kind of genre in filmmaking. You know, when you talk about horror, even till today, no matter how popular horror is, I guarantee that if you mention horror to somebody, you know, in Hollywood, it's like, oh, horror, you know, it doesn't resonate as serious filmmaking, right? What's the last horror movie that won an Oscar? You know, was it Jaws?
Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs. Right.
Yeah.
And people still argue that it's not horror.
Right.
You know,
right.
You still tell the people, it's not horror, it's a thriller.
Sure, sure. And that's the thing. And the people that are arguing against that is because they don't give a weight to horror. They don't give that serious, you know, consideration that this is an art form. It's like, cut people's heads off. And same thing like when you were in heavy metal, and when you were a kid and you might have listened to heavy metal, and you said to somebody, "Man, I love heavy metal." And they were like, "Oh, isn't that kill your mother, kill your father?"
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You see, that all the time. Yeah. And it was just this like, well, we're just going to stuff you into this little descriptive, you know, box, and this is what you are, and you're not real movie making, you're horror. You know, so I think even as people have been able to make a lot of money from it now, and if it's done right and it's been successful, I still think that there's that there is just a draw for people, outcasts, people that are not taken seriously or considered. Somehow horror is just that meeting point where a lot of people kind of come to, like, hey, because there's such a great underground driving force to it. that people are they just come together, they find each other, and they say, hey, here's where I can talk to people people that love horror seriously.
Right.
And, you know, not just people that are like, oh my God, that was so gross. People that really are into it and appreciate it for what it is and want to see it do better and succeed and be a more popular genre. Although you know that once it does, then everybody's going to be the people that hate horror because it's popular. So, you know, you can't.
Well, it's now like because like superheroes, right? Like I was into superheroes and comic books when you would still get your ass kicked for that, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Now all of a sudden, you know, the next Marvel movie will make $1.5 billion, and now everyone loves superheroes. You know, it's no longer to the point where the nerds are pissed about that now. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Because like, well, wait a second, that was our little thing. Like you said, Tom, you made a great point. Horror was our thing, you know.
Yeah.
And now, like with the comic book movies. People are like, wait a second now. They're like, there's girls that are running around now that say they like comic books?
Right, right.
What?
Right. And, but what's great about what you're talking about the superheroes, and Tyler and I have had this discussion before, and I'm glad I could bring it up now, but there's so many people that go see these superhero movies and they're like, oh, Green Lantern was awful, or I hated Christian Bale as Batman, or blah, 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 and they're picking on every little thing in the superhero movies. And I talked to Todd and I said, dude, when we were kids, there was a muscle man painted green running, doing stuff in slow motion, and we loved it.
We loved it.
So most of guys like us, now that see these superhero movies, it could be the worst superhero movie, we're still blown away because we're like, oh my God, they actually were able to do this film and it looks fantastic. You know, and we appreciate that. And like Todd, have a lot of these young guys walking around now, they're like, oh, I hated what they did with Batman and Superman, and oh, I hate, and it's like, dude, did you see what the Batman that we used to watch? Or
the original Captain America.
Right, you know?
right.
And you're like, dude, the Spider-Man that I watched used to throw a rope over him.
Right.
And you're complaining about Tobey Maguire's, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Thor had a hammer that was they bought at Sears. <You know? laughs> Like, wow, that's awesome, you know.
Right, right. And people are complaining about the discrepancies from the comic book in the plot line, and I'm like, dude. He's flying through the air with a lightning bolt striking and you're complaining.
You know, we have horror fans have it better than they ever had as far as TV, and we still bitch about it and don't support even like the good stuff that's on TV, like Hannibal. You know, I thought Hannibal was such a brilliant fucking TV show, and it never got that wholehearted support. I'm like, you know, I remember when I was a kid, you got very little horror on the TV show, and it was always watered down, always PG. I know everyone loves the Friday the 13th series. I loved it too, but look how tame that was.
Yeah,
compared to we now have American Horror Story, The Exorcist, which I understand is coming back for a second season,
right.
Hannibal, which Brian Fuller keeps saying he's going to bring back at some point in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, it's all over television right now. We've really got it good in that respect, and some of it is pretty decent, you know.
Yeah.
Not all of it. I understood The Omen was horrible. I never watched it, but
I never did either. I never, and there's a few of those shows that you've mentioned that I really haven't gotten a chance to watch yet, but, and I want to give a chance to, because I've heard great things about them, and
yeah.
There is an abundance of it on TV now. The Mist is now the television show. Preacher is very much a horror, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And I love it. The Walking Dead, you know, Fear the Walking Dead, the spin-off. There's so much. And it's funny, and I know a lot of people like to bash The Walking Dead, and they bash Fear the Walking Dead. When I was a kid, if there was a TV show about zombies, I would have lost my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have loved every minute of it, you know, instead of watching Land of the Lost with a big foam dinosaur.
Right. Right.
But no, don't.
Marshall and Ollie.
Keep complaining about these great shows that you're tired of the plot. Well, please, continue.
Yeah. Oh, man, Tom makes a great point, and he and I, we spent hours talking about that. People don't, and I think, Tom, you know, I never thought about this before until just this second. I think that's why, like, people are now just dreaming up shit to bitch about. Like, you get a show like The Walking Dead that I would have sold my soul for to have that show 20 years ago, you know? And now, like, okay, they have a couple of episodes that are misfires, you know? Because, gee, who would have thought you can't hit a home run every freaking time, you know? But, you know, you have some episodes that are not quite up to snuff, and people are like, oh, I'm done with this effing show. That's it. I'm officially done. Yeah, you've been officially done for 7 seasons now.
No, but you somehow still know what's happening.
Yeah, you hate the show, like, and hate watching now is even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get people that watch The Walking Dead for the only reason to complain about it.
Yep.
You know, and then meanwhile, you know, you have us where we'll go online the next day and start discussing it so people can tell us we suck because we posted spoilers.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And the worst part is like, oh my God, they killed my favorite character, which that is exactly what makes that show so compelling because you never know other than who is going to live or die.
Alan, I was totally... I was totally going to say the exact same thing. With people go, oh, they killed my favorite character, and now I'm going to stop watching. And my response is, I watch because I want to see every single one of my characters get killed in the frightening way possible. I don't want to watch them all get away. There's 16 characters on the show, for crying out loud. Have some of
the entire world. Yeah, the entire world is getting ate except these guys who are my friends. Reedus is safe unless he comes up for contract negotiation or finds a bar of soap.
Reedus, every episode, I pray to the dark gods that Daryl buys it just so I can watch the internet have a meltdown. I cannot stress this enough. How much I wish for that to happen so I could watch Facebook collectively shit its pants.
I can't wait. I truly believe that it will never happen until the series is ready to end.
Then I
predict it, and I could be wrong, but I predict that towards the end of the series, they're probably going to do a Who Dies, Rick or Daryl type thing.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, kind of have this build up to the end, like, and one of our main characters dies. You know, will it be Rick or Daryl? I could see them doing that, but even though I would applaud the writers if they did it out of the blue, like if they just suddenly go, oh, Walking Dead's been, it's been renewed for 3 seasons, and then suddenly they kill Daryl. I can't believe that. But they cannot do it just because of the fact that he draws so many eyes to the show. And if you have Glenn die and people stop watching over Glenn, then you could just forget about killing Daryl.
That would be riots over Daryl.
Yeah, but I would love to see it on a creative. If they did it, if it was well done, I would love to see it because I'd say, man, they got guts. The show is like they really feel like they have something where it doesn't matter who lives or dies on the show anymore. You're going to watch it. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And, I think that they have their few characters that draw everybody to the show.
Yeah, if he were to die, I would probably want to take the next day off of work and watch media.
Oh, yeah.
Think about it. You know, after the Super Bowl or the World Series, these people go out and they flip over cars, they destroy cities. You're going to have cities overran by women screaming and breaking shit everywhere. I'm going to sit here and watch YouTube all damn day.
Yeah.
Just over Daryl's character.
There will be ovaries explode all over America.
Yeah.
I'll get hate with that. But, I mean, how bad does it suck to be Daryl? He goes 7 seasons, never touched by a zombie. He gets bit by a fan and horror hound. Right?
Yeah.
But it takes balls, like Sons of Anarchy. I don't know, is anybody an SOA fan?
Yeah.
Sons of Anarchy and the balls that Kurt Sutter had to kill Opie off in the 5th season.
Yeah.
Who was arguably the most popular character on that show. To me, I loved him more than Jax.
Yeah.
And to kill him off like that.
No.
And it takes balls. But, you know, you've also got another... your producers are okay with that, you know?
You know, that scene actually turned my stomach watching Opie get killed that night. And speaking of which, I can't believe you mentioned it. Just last night, I watched the movie Fist Fight, Ice Cube. And,
yeah. All
right, and there's that guy, the same character, the actor that killed Opie. And as soon as I saw
him,
I had this little cringe on my face. Because I hit him. I did. I swear to God. But, yeah, at any rate, sorry about that. A little segue. Hey, gentlemen, Alan and I and House of Tortured Souls definitely want to thank you guys for joining us today. I don't want to take any more of your time. We've had you on. Well, we've been on over an hour. We've had a blast talking to you guys.
Oh, it was great fun.
Really have had a good time. A lot of open, good discussions. We definitely want to wish you guys the best of luck with your movie coming out. Go ahead real quick and give the audience another rundown on the film that you guys are working on, where they can go and help donate, and give it away, please.
Go for it, Tom.
Okay, so please check us out on Facebook. We're at Theater of Terror, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. You can check us out on theaterofterror.net as well, our website. We have a link to our Indiegogo site. If you go to Indiegogo, look up The Theater of Terror. Theater is spelled just the way I gave it to you before. Lucas said, we could really use your help. We're making 4 short films for an anthology project, the Theater of Terror Anthology. The films are The Gift, The Bookworm, Abducted, and Endangered. 4 15-minute short films. We have great tones of Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, Tales from the Dark Side, Creepshow. It's going to be that type of a film. We have a bunch of great cinematographers involved, great actors involved. The first film is done. The second one begins shooting in July, the day before Grindhouse Nights, July 28th, we'll be shooting. So we're really excited about that. You guys could please visit us. No donation is too small, and no donation is too large. We have great perks on the site. You could be in the films, get posters, DVDs, come to get invited to the private parties, private screenings. We have a ton of great stuff that we're offering to our supporters. And if you guys could reach out to us, please, we'd really, really enjoy having you on board our team as we try to make these films. And we always shoot for high-quality independent films. You heard what I said, that we like to make suspenseful, thrilling, horrific, great storytelling. That's the kind of stuff that we're trying to put together here, high-quality films. We're not just putting together splatterfests. The money is going towards the crew, the cast, people that we think deserve to be reimbursed for their talents. And that's why we're trying to raise money to bring up the quality to that level. So thank you guys for having us on. We really appreciate it. And
you're more than welcome.
Todd, any closing words, sir?
Yeah, just echoing what Tom said. It's been a blast so far working on the project. Being behind the scenes this time has been a thrill and an education for me. Learning, you know, how to produce the film. So I want to say thanks to Tom for bringing me on board. It has been a blast. And again, Grindhouse Nights at Cafe Z is coming up in Union, New Jersey, July 29th. It's our 5th anniversary. We've got a full day of independent films, some great entertainment. We've got Sienna Rizza will be dancing. Nicole Oliva will be singing. Baron Misuraca will be rocking us out at night like he always does. And we have a burlesque dancer, Phelan Lynx, this time around, who will be dancing for us. It's a whole day. And it's just a lot of fun. At least I've been told, because I don't remember it much the next day because it's a blur of
those activity. Are the best parties.
Yeah, but it is great fun. So come on out and join us. And again, help us out on Indiegogo. Like Tom said, no contribution is too small. And even just a share goes a long way to get the word out on social media. Thanks again, guys, for having us on. It was great fun.
Todd, Tom, thank you guys both very much. And everybody else, House of Tortured Souls Live. Thanks you, and we will see you guys soon.
All right.
Keep it evil.
Rock on.
Shockingly, the cop showed up, and those two losers had the split. So until next time, this is MC Morningstar saying goodbye, and I'll see you guys later.